her jacket. "Are you going to be okay?" Dawn said, cupping her elbow. She'd never seemed comfortable tottering along on high heels, and now that she had a drink or two inside her, she was unsteady. "Marcus, I'm going to get on you a cab and see her back to the officer's mess."
"Thanks, I'll be okay," she said. "I need to go check out Mom's apartment."
She turned to Maria.
"Your Dom's one in a million. He really is."
It was an odd phrase for Anya.
"Your Dom."
It was almost as if she wanted to make it clear they were just friends, and that she had no designs on him. Maybe everyone else treated her as predatory. Marcus stepped in. "I'll see that she's okay, Dom," he said. And, utterly out of character for him, he offered her his arm in a formal, old man kind of way, as if he'd been drilled that was how to treat a lady. "We'll be fine." Dom called a cab anyway and slipped the driver some bills.
"Those two," he said, indicating Marcus and Anya. "Take them wherever they want to go."
Dom and Maria went back to his folks' house, and he spent the night curled up on the sofa with her, with Benedicto and Sylvia in their arms. He couldn't bear to shut his eyes or let go of any of them. He wasn't sure how he was going to go back on duty, because he didn't want to turn his back on his family for a second, in case he looked around again and they weren't there.
"She's right," Maria murmured, eyes shut. "You're one in a million."
"Hey, it was nothing like that."
"I know.
We just ended up in that room waiting to get the medals, and it all sort of, I don't know, me, her, and Marcus. Friendship. Something fell into place."
"Now, Marcus and Anya," Maria said, "I know it looks like a good idea to you, but those two are never going to last beyond tonight. Don't try to fix it for them. And she's an officer, he's enlisted. They'll end up on a charge."
"Not if they keep it for off-duty hours."
Dom hated crushed hopes. He wanted to see Marcus glowing with dumb head-over-heels love tomorrow morning, not keeping his head down so Dom wouldn't nudge him and ask if things went okay.
And things change. People change. Life was always going to be like that now. There was before ASFO and after ASFO. Dom now lived in after ASFO, and it was a strange new land where the only landmarks he recognized were his family and Marcus Phoenix. And even they would never be the same. Chapter 20. I don't know his name. I don't know anything about him, other than that he was a guard at ASFO Point. His name wasn't Nathan, and if he'd been one of my men, I'd have been proud of him. Make sure he isn't forgotten. A heavily redacted official report of the ASFO Point raid from Major Victor Hoffman, found in the vaults of the Austrian Embassy, Jacinto, stamped, uncirculated. Recovery Room, Medical Wing, Reitman Hospital. 14 years after E-Day, the present day.
"Are you done with me yet?" Hoffman demanded.
"No." Dr. Heyman prodded the back of his calf. It was still numb, and he couldn't see what she was doing because he was lying face down, which didn't improve his mood.
"Have you ever tried quiet gratitude?"
"Screw that. I've had more wounds like this than you've given enemas."
"That was when we could afford to lose a few gears," she said. "Now even miserable old bastards like you have to be kept operational, and trust me, I could ruin your entire week with one of my enemas."
She turned to the next bed, visibly angry, not playing for effect.
"I don't want any more lip from you either, Sergeant Phoenix. If I'd known you'd just come out of the slab, I'd have had you in here days ago. You're probably carrying every disease known to man."
"I washed my hands," Phoenix said, his voice like a dead grub being dragged over gravel.
"Twice."
"Well, you two keep each other company while I go treat a real patient. They've just brought in an 18-year-old corporal who's lost both legs,
So you two fucking heroes go right ahead and feel sorry for yourselves until I get back. That news did the trick just fine. Hoffman felt like dirt. But he was now cooped up on his own with Phoenix, and there was no avoidance, no small talk, nothing to do except deal with the enormity of what still hung between them when there were no more grubs around.
I've got a reputation. He won't expect tact from me anyway. I need to know something, Phoenix.
Hoffman defied Heyman's instructions and rolled over to sit up, because he had to look the man in the eye.
Why the hell did you come back for me after what I did to you?
Phoenix was staring at the ceiling, fingers meshed behind his head.
No gear gets left behind. Maybe I went back for Kaliso. Let's clear the air. I can't abide unfinished business. I left you to die.
Yes, said Phoenix. His tone was matter-of-fact.
You left me for the grubs, while you let the rapists, cannibals, pedophiles, and serial killers go free.
Hoffman still didn't know why he'd done it. Phoenix's complete lack of visible anger was actually worrying him. He had to lance this boil right now.
You want to settle the score, then?
Nothing to settle.
I'll bet.
Shit, he's just like his old man, a damn machine. If I hadn't seen him at Santiago's grave, I'd have thought he didn't have a scrap of feeling in him.
You're okay about it. No hard feelings, minor misunderstanding and all that shit. We get what we deserve in life.
No, you don't. Nobody with your record deserves that. Hoffman felt swallowed up by guilt. He found himself blurting out his reasoning, feeble as it now seemed, knowing it still didn't justify what he'd done, but his mouth was on autopilot.
I'm scared. I'm always scared. Not death. Worse than that. Getting shit wrong. Getting people wrong. You dicked around and cost men's lives, Sergeant, he said.
Like I never did.
You cost us Jacinto. Your father just snapped his fingers and bang, you leave your men and stroll off with the targeting laser? You think that doesn't make you an asshole, at the very least? You've got a buddy like Dom who'd shit his last drop of blood for you, who put you first even when his wife went missing, and you do that to men depending on you?
I meant, Phoenix said slowly, that I let someone die a long time ago. So I can't bitch about someone doing the same to me. Hoffman was completely thrown by that revelation. He had no idea how to come back, or, more to the point, climb down. He wanted to apologize. He really did.
Just tell me the truth, he said. Not what you told the court-martial. I need to know. What did your father have that was so important that you'd leave your post to get it? Because I can't believe Adam Phoenix would expect his son to do that just to save his sorry ass.
He died before I got to him. I'll never know.
He must have said something.
He put the cog first. He had his reasons. That's the only thing I could trust about him.
That's got to be the fucking lamest excuse for running away that I ever heard, Hoffman said.
There, his mouth was on rapid fire again, all bluster to cover the real shit, the embarrassment at hearing this hardest of gears admit that his father was an asshole. Actually, Hoffman believed Phoenix. He probably hadn't said that at the court-martial because publicly admitting that Adam Phoenix wasn't a paragon of wisdom and virtue was one pain too many to handle. But you could take the stricture against speaking ill of the dead a little too far.
You were too late. Your plan didn't work, and people died. And we lost most of Jacinto.
I know I fucked up, Colonel. I had the rest of my sentence to think about it. And it wasn't the first time I was too late. If you want to stoke the self-loathing, you're way too late. Hoffman's anger, with himself and with Phoenix, ground to a halt.
You don't know why you did it, do you?
You don't know why you ran to your daddy like he still controlled your goddamn life. Phoenix propped himself up on one elbow and loomed over Hoffman across the gap between the treatment tables. They were almost nose to nose. You're an asshole, but you're not a sadistic asshole. You ever ask yourself why you did it?
All the damn time, Hoffman yelled in his face. Every day. Because I can't believe I did it. Why, I didn't just shoot you and have done with it. Probably because I couldn't. Because before that day, you were one of the finest soldiers I ever knew.
He had saved Phoenix not long after that, though. The bastard had needed rescuing after he steered the light mass bomb to its target. Without Hoffman's help, Dom wouldn't have been able to pull Phoenix on board the Raven. It was like fate had given him a chance to make amends. But Hoffman knew that didn't wipe the slate clean, and it never would. The door suddenly swung open so hard that it hit the tiles and bounced back. Dr. Heyman stepped in with the kind of face she reserved for serious physical intervention. Hoffman knew that expression only too well.
"Shut up!" she yelled. "This is a damn hospital, not a bar. Phoenix, get dressed and pick up your medications from the dispensary. Any symptoms, get back here, not because I care, but because disease control gets harder every day. Hoffman, I'm going to enjoy sticking this needle in your ass, so turn over again and keep your mouth shut."
Hoffman knew he didn't deserve courtesy because he often didn't give it. He also knew exactly what made him reinforce that wall of callousness more heavily with each year, and he wondered if Dr. Heyman's job had turned her into this harpy, too, her defense against going crazy, or, worse, finding that the task she had was beyond her, and that she would let down everyone who was depending on her for their lives. Phoenix grabbed his clothes and walked out. Hoffman held her at bay for a moment with a raised hand and called to Phoenix. The place was so quiet that the man had to be able to hear him clear through to the entrance gate.
"I'm sorry!" Hoffman yelled. "There, I said it! I'm frigging sorry I left you there! You deserved better, you surly asshole!"
If Marcus heard, he didn't stop. His boots thudded all the way down the hall without missing a step. Dr. Heyman held up a hypodermic and checked the vial for air bubbles.
"Okay," she said. "Just remember, it's only pain."
Hoffman braced for impact. The bitch would have been right at home brandishing a chainsaw, but he was damned if he was going to give her so much as a twitch by way of reaction. She must have picked the bluntest, oldest, largest recycled needle in the whole damn city. But she was right. It was only pain. College Green, outside the Jacinto Enclave. Caliso insisted on coming. He'd sworn that he'd retrieve the bodies from the burned-out truck, and that was the first port of call. Bernie and the rest of the squad, minus Marcus, piled into the dill and set off to gather up what was theirs. Dom needs a little time alone to think, just as well. Nobody argued with Caliso. It wasn't simply the fact that he took this warrior tradition stuff way too seriously. It wasn't Bernie's Island's way, not at all. But also that he was a hard bastard who looked like he had a very short temper. The real Caliso was a lot less volatile than his image, but most people liked to give the man the benefit of the doubt. Bernie understood this compulsion only too well, though. Coming right after a harrowing hour with Dom discussing how his brother died, the principle of gathering remains was now rubbing a very raw nerve, an icon for the last bastion of civilization against savagery. She saw stranded, much as she saw grubs. That didn't make her unique as a gear, because stranded were almost universally loathed. She thought it not because the cog had told her so, but because she'd spent so long among them and seen too much for herself. No gear would do the things she'd seen, not to another gear, maybe not to anybody.
"You okay, Dom?" she said.
Dom, bless him, had had no qualms about crying his eyes out and hugging her. Like Cole, The childhood foundations of his life had been solid and let him weather an awful lot of storms.
"Just thinking about Marcus," he said, "explains a lot. He changed after Aspho. Now I know why. And he's not the same as he was before he went to prison."
"So you're going to talk to him about it?"
"I've got to. No secrets between us. Funny, I always thought I'd failed Carlos. I really did."
There was nothing more corrosive to a relationship than waiting for the other person to come clean with you. Bernie hoped Dom would cut Marcus some slack. But Dom was all heart, and even if he was hurt, he would never let Marcus know that. Caliso banged his fist on the Dill's hatch.
"Done," he said.
He lobbed chunks of charred material into the cargo section, and Bernie did a double-take to make sure they really were just pieces of metal for reclamation, not human remains. No, Caliso was very proper about that kind of thing.
"Come on, let's try starting that trailer."
The huge articulated flatbed had shuddered to a halt near College Green. As soon as the Dill reached the intersection, they could see it, and stranded swarmed all over it like dung beetles. The steel fermentation vats were still on the flatbed, but there were lifting straps rigged to it, suggesting that some tosser had gone off to fetch a crane of some kind. Bernie dismounted from the Dill even before Dom switched off the engine. She wasn't in a sunny mood for anything non-gear today. She didn't even shout a warning. She aimed the Lancer a meter above head height and fired off a long burst. The Stranded dived for cover as she strode up to the trailer.
"Boomer lady," Cole said, jumping down behind her. "Remember, cats is bad enough, but eating people is just plain wrong."
She'd seen that, too. But somehow it was nowhere near the worst excesses of a human race in collapse. One of the Stranded found the balls to venture out from behind cover and confront her.
"You dumb bitch, you could have killed someone," he said. "What the hell are you playing at?"
"Correct. I could have killed you."
She switched back into a Bernie that she'd been glad to put aside for the last few days and let the chainsaw run for a few deafening seconds to focus their attention. They'd probably never seen the bayonet operating close up before.
"The law's clear. You loot, I shoot. Now get your diseased arse back into your hovel and bring back every last rivet and spring you've stolen, or so help me I'll burn down every house I think is storing stolen goods. Understand?"
Baird swaggered up to stand beside her in a rare moment of solidarity.
"What she said."
He looked at his watch.
10 minutes. Move it."
The man looked past them toward the armadillo.
"Santiago? Santiago, this ain't right. Tell her. We thought you understood us. After all we've done for you."
Bernie listened for a hint of disapproval in Dom's voice as he jumped down from the Dill. She really didn't want to offend him. Like Cole, he was her benchmark of decency, and she'd lost sight of that standard so many times since E-Day that the prospect of that blurred line terrified her.
"I don't want to be like these savages. I want to stay human, stay civilized. I'm a gear."
"Do what the sergeant says," Dom said quietly.
"We need that thing for food production. And if you'd stop being such assholes and just join us, you'd get to eat some, too."
Bernie wasn't sure if he was just distracted by the morning's traumatic memories, or if he was disappointed that she wasn't the same good old Bernie he'd thought she was. She waited with Baird and Cole, just doing the staring act as cans of fuel, truck seats, engine parts, and other prizes already stripped from the truck began piling up in the street.
"I'll know if you're keeping anything back," said Baird, "because I'm going to put this truck back together again."
And he did. Bernie had to hand it to him. He had a rare gift for engineering, and he offered up parts to gaps with unerring accuracy. She marveled at it. At last she saw some common ground to be explored, a possible foundation for the kind of working relationship she wanted. Delta Squad might have been okay with his constant whining, but she was too old and too overrun by the real tragedies in life to tolerate any shit over trivia. She needed to make peace with him somehow.
"You ever repaired a truck like this before?" she asked.
"Never."
Baird's expression had relaxed into a kind of intense concentration, almost like a sense of wonder. He straightened up from the engine compartment to reach for a wrench.
"But how hard can it be to work it out? It's just a machine."
"You know, you're better at it than anyone else," she said. "Don't sell yourself short."
She could have sworn he was waiting for the sting in the tail. When he didn't get one, he looked almost put out. He was completely silent from then until they got back to Reitman, and then it was clear that he had no idea how to deal with anything beyond the back and forth of low-grade abuse, and didn't even look comfortable playing a harmless game of cards in the mess with the rest of the squad. He seemed almost grateful when Marcus showed up and sat down at the table. Marcus was clearly his favorite target, much more rewarding than an old bag like her. Maybe it was because the risk seemed higher. Marcus was the dormant volcano that had been known to engulf cities within living memory, and built like a brick shithouse as well.
"Hey, Dick Brain," Baird said casually, not looking up from his hand of cards. "Hey, asshole."
Marcus, quiet as ever, accepted a fresh hand from Cole.
"I hear we got the truck back, all of it.
Granny had a chainsaw chat with the vermin."
"Good for her."
Marcus gave her one of those looks, the one that said he wanted a word later. She knew damn well why. Dom.
"We could do with an enforcer."
"So," Baird said, "you gonna tell us what your chat with Dom was really about, Granny?"
Bernie had found a comfortable balance in the last few days, back in a culture she could rely on, and still peppered with people she knew from before the time the world as she knew it ended. It was still very fragile, though, offset by 14 years of basic survival. Baird had now stepped on a mine. It wasn't her issues, so much as the fact that he had raised the subject of Carlos in front of both Dom and Marcus.
"None of your business, sweetheart," she said.
"Shit, that'll just keep him going. He's stuck in permanent bloody puberty."
"Sentimental stuff.
It's another major screw-up by our heroic sergeant here, isn't it?"
The switch was thrown. Baird could have no idea just how far below the belt he'd hit Marcus, but it was clear to Bernie, even if nobody else, except Dom, knew it. She couldn't sit back and ignore it. Some things had to be said and defended.
"No," she said. "Actually, it's not. Do me a favor and stay off the subject."
Cole hummed tunelessly under his breath.
"Damon, baby, won't you please think of the little kiddies?"
"Okay," Baird said, undeterred. "Why am I expected to trust my life to a guy who was serving 40 years for helping us lose Jacinto to the grubs, but I can't ask questions about his service record?"
Dom didn't even get a syllable out before Bernie dived in.
"Maybe," she said, "it's because I'm telling you to show some respect to a real friggin' man, Blondie."
"Shit," Cole said. "I'm just enjoying the game. Kiss and make up, you two, will ya?"
"No, sod it, let's deal with it once and for all."
Bernie got up and stood to one side of the table, feeling her pulse pounding in her throat.
"Come on, mouth almighty. Let's see what you're made of, other than a big gob."
Baird got up and stood with his hands on his hips, feet apart in his screw-you stance.
"Don't think I'm gonna apologize to him and kiss your ass because you got some sergeant stripes from ancient history, Mataki."
The mess fell silent. There were plenty of gears around watching the show. She'd been waiting a decent while for this. Life was still fragile, so it didn't even count as losing her temper. Did it? Baird was 20-odd years younger, faster, heavier, taller. He was combat-trained. As she came at him, he hunched, clearly expecting a kick in the balls. What he got was a hard right hook to the back of the jaw, just under the ear. It was an excruciatingly painful punch that worked every time. Baird almost fell. He hit the wall. He certainly made some interesting noises, and the rest of the mess cheered encouragingly. Dom put his arm out to stop Bernie from going back for seconds, but she didn't really have that planned, and Cole just caught Baird by the scruff of the neck.
"Remember the kiddies?" Cole said. "Now be nice."
"Shit,"
Baird said at last.
"Shit."
Marcus sat at the table, still rearranging his hand, looking unconcerned. He wasn't, of course. She knew that.
"If you hadn't shown Jeff a little humanity in the ambush, I'd just be waiting for the chance to frag you now, Blondie."
Bernie stepped back a couple of paces. She wouldn't bet on Baird not hitting a woman, even with Cole restraining him.
"But you still better mind your mouth with me, got it?"
She turned her back on him and ambled off, careful not to look hurried, almost expecting a thud in the back as Baird resumed a fight she would almost certainly lose badly. But she ended up back in the locker area and sat down, knowing she'd just shown him how much he could wind her up. Bad mistake. Never let them find out where the switches are. How did I forget that? Marcus followed and stood staring down at her as if he'd remembered something.
"Good punch."
"Yeah. Jaws aren't built for lateral impact. The nerve pain's a showstopper. Not lasting damage, though."
Marcus was still standing there as if he was waiting for an explanation.
"What?"
she said, embarrassed at her loss of control.
"Just thinking."
Marcus might have looked like a slab of dumb muscle, but she never forgot he was ferociously intelligent, and, despite a complete inability to drop his guard, a very sharp judge of people.
"You must have had a tough time getting here."
"You bet."
"There were times when I liked locusts better than humans, believe me. A woman traveling on her own has to be creative."
"Baird's a scared kid. He just mouths off instead of shitting himself, that's all."
"He's nearly your age, Marcus, and he's been in uniform for almost as long as you have. Are you a scared kid?"
Marcus glanced away at the window, its glass reinforced by tape and filtered by a haze of grime.
"Yeah, most of the time," he said. "We all are. The grown-ups don't have the answers, and we can't trust them anyway."
"Okay, you're telling me to make up and play nice with him."
"No. But if he was a genuine asshole, he'd be a stranded gang lord. He's still in armor, and he's never let us down. It's just his frigging tedious mouth."
"Okay. But I can't have him saying that about you."
"Words," Marcus said and shrugged. "Heard 'em all."
"So I told Dom what he wanted to know."
Marcus looked suddenly defeated, as if one more cornerstone of his trust had crumbled.
"We agreed never to do that." "That was then. He needs closure now. I warned him it would upset him." "He's lost his entire family."
"Yeah, and that's why he needed to know."
Marcus's temper never went much further than a grunted expletive or two, but she knew she was on dangerous ground. She was more afraid of leaving him feeling betrayed than anything else.
"Don't forget, Dom's my friend."
It was friend, not buddy. The way he said it made clear there was only one of those, and that no replacements would be considered.
"If finding Maria for him cost my life, it's a price I'd pay. Do you understand that?"
"Oh, I think so," Bernie said. "I was there, remember?"
She patted him on the back as she left, wanting him to understand that there were no hard feelings. She was pissed off that Baird had impugned Marcus's courage. Marcus was pissed off that the H-word had been used. He really didn't like the hero thing. When Bernie resumed her hand of cards, Baird was a quieter, wiser man, at least for the moment. She decided she'd read another human being totally wrong for once, and wondered if she was slipping. Baird didn't need understanding or a meeting of minds. Like all brats, he just needed a good clip around the ear from his mother from time to time.
"Deal," she said.
Delta Barracks Block. Dom put it off as long as he could, but it had to be tackled. He'd come to term with Carlos's death a long time ago. It went in the queue with Benedicto and Sylvia and his parents, knowing he could deal with it like he dealt with the rest of the grieving, but still staggered by the unique misery of each. Every bereavement had its own flavor that left him unprepared. But knowing the details about Carlos was like losing him all over again. It was another death, a different pain. Dom now had to reorder his world. When he walked into Marcus's quarters, it was like the conversation had already begun an hour ago.
"Why didn't you tell me?" Dom asked.
Marcus, lying on the bed with his hands behind his head, kept his eyes fixed on the ceiling. It really pissed Dom off when he wouldn't look him in the eye.
"It would have skewed the way you saw him," Marcus said at last.
"Hey, I loved my brother, but I wasn't blind. He could be a crazy bastard, I knew that."
"He was a hero. He was a hero from the moment I met him. He's still a hero."
Yes, he was. But this wasn't just about Carlos. It was about Marcus. It was about the truth, and why an otherwise brutally honest man decided to lie. Omission was still lying. Dom needed to know the totality of his brother, and now that he did, he felt torn up and desperately lonely deep in his guts, and also off the hook. For all the fresh pain, that sickening cold sensation deep in his guts and the weird feeling at the back of his throat from the spike of adrenaline, Dom felt some relief. Carlos was a regular mortal. Dom hadn't failed to live up to him. They'd both done their best, and on the day, Carlos's best just hadn't been good enough. On any other day, it would have been Dom instead. At Aspo Point, in the sinking Marlins, it very nearly was. "It stinks to find out how he died after so many years, especially when you knew for all those friggin' years." Dom wasn't berating Marcus. He just wanted to be sure they dealt with all the unsaid things, because Dom liked emotions out in the open, and Marcus couldn't manage that however hard he tried.
"How do you think I feel now? What else haven't you told me?"
"I do know how you feel."
Marcus sat up and swung his feet onto the floor.
"Dad never told me he knew where my mother disappeared, remember?"
It was the most shocking thing in Dom's childhood, a real mystery. He remembered the day Marcus was told that his mom had vanished.
"Is that what he called you back for, when you left your post?"
"No."
"Well, shit, Marcus, just spit it out."
This was going to be ugly. Dom didn't want to get into some kind of competitive grief. He had to remind himself that Marcus was just explaining, just trying to prove to Dom that he wasn't dismissing his sense of loss, that for all his silence and apparent lack of emotion, he still knew what the pain was all about.
"We were in the locust tunnels looking for emulsion crystals for the targeting laser. We found Mom's body."
"He knew she'd gone there? Shit."
"Yeah. Some field research in off-limits places."
"Why?"
"I'll never know."
It should have been a tirade, venting all his frustration and sense of betrayal, but Marcus's tone was as quiet and weary as ever.
"He let me think she'd just left us."
Dom never had any problems telling anyone anything. He couldn't grasp how Marcus could sit on so many terrible memories that his friend needed to know to understand him.
"Hey, I'm sorry."
"I'm the one hijacking your shitty day, and you're worrying about my problems instead of your own. Again."
"Bullshit," Dom said. "At least I know why you didn't tell me about Carlos. To protect me."
"He asked you to look after me, didn't he?"
Marcus just nodded.
"And you always have."
Dom gave him a mock shove in the chest. When you're ready, I want to know what happened in prison. Because you've changed.
Marcus grunted.
It's early days, he said. I'll tell you. Sometime.
The conversation was over for the time being. Dom still needed to talk, though, so he went in search of Bernie, who could talk about Carlos without pain or guilt. He found her cleaning her rifle.
"Want to see the pictures of my kids?" he asked,
knowing that she wouldn't feel creeped out by it. Bernie put down the wire brush and the small tin of oil. The cloth on the table was covered with fragments of stuff that Dom didn't want to think about right then.
"I'd love to," she said, and put the rifle to one side.
Epilogue.
We could have cooperated with the Groundwalkers for our mutual salvation, but they are humans, and they only understand dominance and ownership. All that we have left is a war to the death. For all their so-called intelligence, humans are blind to the threat right before their eyes. We never stood a chance of enlisting their aid, so now we fight alone. And we will stand on their corpses to do so.
Mira, the Locust Queen. Reitman Hospital, a few days later. The grubs still hadn't come back in any great numbers, and those that emerged were almost all drones. Dom never wanted to use the word bored when he meant not fighting for his life, but there was a definite sense of not knowing what to do with himself, and he wasn't alone.
"Shit, I'm going to have to get a hobby," Cole said. "Where the hell am I going to find one of those?"
"Baird baiting," Dom said. "It's a spectator sport, too."
Even the dwindling King Raven fleet took advantage of the downturn in business to ground half the squadron for maintenance. Dom had the feeling of a change, a big one, but he wasn't sure why he wasn't happy about that. Maybe it was because there was no point rebuilding life until he found Maria. But the first sign that they had fresh problems, environment problems, not grubs, was in the morning patrol briefing, just a casual reference from the geological survey manager, who had reports of refugees starting to arrive in stranded settlements because of flooding in Tolan, 2 hours south of Jacinto.
"Is this our problem?" Hoffman asked. "Other than strain on the public order situation outside the secure zone?"
"Not a problem per se," said the survey manager, "except we don't know the cause or the extent. Could be inconvenient, could be catastrophic. Oh, for the days of a satellite network."
He took a scrap of paper out of his pocket.
"We received this message in the Emergency Management Center today. The whole damn place is filling up with water. Help us, you bastards. Well, that's pretty clear, if unscientific."
Dom had combed the stranded communities around Jacinto for a decade. He wasn't averse to taking a look at settlements farther afield, because where they were stranded, there might be Maria, or at least information.
"Is there anyone left down there?" Baird said. "I thought that was evacuated years ago."
"Stranded," Cole said. "There's always stranded."
Baird sneered.
"Like I said, nobody left there."
Dom had been to Tolan a few times just after E-Day. Pretty dull, big, grim public buildings, an endless elevated highway. At least, it had been like that before the Locust overran it. It was lost to the cog now.
"Want us to take a look, Colonel?" Marcus asked.
Whatever had passed between them, Marcus and Hoffman appeared to have reached an understanding again. Dom hoped it would hold out.
"Just in case." "Remember, we can't evacuate civilians," Hoffman said. "That's an airlift we can't handle. So if you go, you go with the express orders that you do not return with passengers under any circumstances."
Dom decided to take Marcus aside later and explain that. It was more about the legacy of Aspho Point than Hoffman's belief that Marcus would turn a recon into a humanitarian relief operation. He remained uneasy about his responsibility to those outside the cog to this day.
But Dom had learned to see beyond the angry Hoffman, who was never satisfied with anyone or anything. The man behind those eyes was scared of failure, scared of being rumbled as the late entry grunt, who should never have been promoted over academy grads, scared of giving in to his impulses like a normal man in case his ordinariness was noticed by his betters and used against him. He looked like he had the survival of the human race on his shoulders and on his alone, and, more than anything, he seemed to feel responsibility for every casualty on his watch. Poor bastard. Even after what he did to Marcus. Poor bastard. But he did help me pull him inboard. He's still the man I knew. Dom had watched Marcus grow up weighed down by a cargo of expectation, too. Hoffman probably loathed Marcus because they had far too much in common. He had a reputation for leading from the front, even when he shouldn't have, and turning a deaf ear to orders that mysteriously hadn't been heard on a bad radio link. Maybe Marcus could see the similarities, and it scared him to think what he might turn into as he grew old.
"Sightseeing tour," Marcus said after the briefing. "We'll overfly in recon, you, me, Baird."
"Light mass?" Baird asked.
"What about it?"
"We don't know how much subsidence it caused when it detonated. Maybe it's diverted an underground river. Lots of water under the surface that we never see."
Marcus shrugged.
"We'll find out. Not much we can do for the locals now."
The King Ravens rarely went far from the city. They were too valuable and too busy. When Dom climbed into the crew bay, he got a definite sense of, not excitement, but extreme interest from the crew. Barber was crew chief, and the pilot was Gil Gettner. Dom had a mild nightmare that one day he'd be casavacked with Dr. Heyman in a raven flown by Gettner, and that he'd be traumatized for life. They both came from the same charm school of "do not question me, little man." Barber rolled his eyes silently as they did the pre-flight checks.
"I haven't been that far south for years," Gettner said. "Not sure I can even find the place on the chart."
"I'm reassured," Baird said.
"Reckon you can do better, Chainsaw Boy?"
Dom put his elbow hard in Baird's ribs.
"No, Lieutenant," Dom said. "Our buddy's just a nervous flyer."
"Oh, I'll pack his parachute myself, then."
Barber mouthed good mood at them and hooked up his safety tether. From the door, the destruction spread out below them like the concentric rings of a target roundel, with Jacinto as the irregularly shaped bullseye. As they flew south, taking recon images, scattered settlements appeared briefly in clearings and vanished into tree cover again, reminding them just how few humans still clung to a precarious existence beyond the city. As they neared Tolan, ruined suburbs began to replace the trees. Dom was taking note of the terrain beneath him, just as he'd been trained to in his commando days, and keeping a rough idea of range and bearing in his head. The raven seemed to be circling.
"Barber," Gettner said, "check the latest VFR sectional for me, will you?"
Barber reached into a bulkhead pocket for the paper charts.
"It's 6 years old." "Yes, but cities don't walk."
"Told you so," Baird murmured, but he had the sense to stop there.
Gettner circled again. As the raven banked, Dom could see a blinding reflection through the broken towers and houses.
"Oh, shit," he said.
Barber spread out the chart on his knees, folded it to the correct strip, and leaned out of the bay to look for landmarks.
"I'm with Santiago," he said. "Shit, indeed. In fact, I'd go as far as a holy fuck."
Gettner's brittle cheer had quieted noticeably.
"I'm glad I'm not delusional."
"It's gone," said Dom, pointing.
Marcus leaned forward and followed his extended arm.
"Look, I'm not crazy, am I?"
The scale of Tolan had confused them. There were still structures on the edge of the city, but the heart of it was a lake that seemed to stretch for kilometers. It was only when the raven climbed that Dom could get the scale and estimate it was maybe 10 clicks across. There was simply nothing there except debris. Trees, ad hoardings, chunks of roof, floating on a surface that was less like a lake than a rolling sea. The city was gone. It was gone. Giant bubbles of air broke the surface foam, like a massive depth charge had been detonated deep below. The surface was a boiling cauldron for a few moments, then the bubbles became steadier and slower. As they watched, the bubbles became more vigorous for a moment. Whatever was beneath the surface was collapsing and venting air pockets. There were also bodies. Most were pretty bloated, so the serious flooding was some days or weeks old. Dom looked automatically for survivors clinging to anything above the waterline, but there was no point looking. Whatever he saw, he would feel obliged to help, but he couldn't, and so all he would take away with him would be a lasting nightmarish guilt at leaving people to die. The bubbles were pretty impressive.
"Shit! Hang on to your frillies, boys!"
Gettner banked the raven sharply and sent it wheeling away from the restless water below.
"I mean it. Be ready to ditch if necessary. This is not good."
Barber slid hard against Dom as the raven tilted, still craning his neck to see what the hell was going on.
"What are you going on about, Gil?"
"Methane. If that's a methane pocket, we're going to go down like a ton of frigging bricks. And if it's come up there, if a pocket that opened can sink a city, then it can vent anywhere."
"Shit," Barber said. It was just a breath. Dom didn't have a clue what Gettner meant. He started to reason it out, but the spectacle of a city becoming a lake, no, a sea, was too distracting. The farther they pulled back, the more impossible it looked. And the more circular it looked.
"It's not methane," Baird said.
"Oh, shall I go back and test your high fucking hypothesis, Professor? If we plummet, you're wrong. Can do."
Baird had finally met someone even more surly and acid-tongued than himself. He shut up.
"Methane makes water and air less dense," Marcus said quietly, leaning toward Dom, as if he didn't want to look like a smartass. Of course, Marcus knew he was the one who'd been the top science student when they were kids.
"Ships won't float, aircraft won't fly. Splat. Sometimes it vents from the seabed during quakes."
"Close enough."
Baird was leaning out from the seat as far as he could to watch.
"But I still say that's not methane. That's a pretty regular ellipse. Nature doesn't do geometric shapes. Look."
The Raven was at a 45-degree elevation from the basin now, high enough and far enough to get a better overview. Baird was right. It looked regular. Almost man-made.
"Circular calderas," Barber said. "Hexagonal basalt plugs. Nature actually does do geometry, Corporal."
Baird just shrugged.
"So you think the light mass shook up the geology around here enough to do that?"
"You ever seen major subsidence in a mining area?"
Barber slapped one palm flat on the other.
"Straight edges. Down like..." "A ton of bricks," Gettner said. "As I was saying, got enough images there, Mr. Observer?"
"No, but you're not going to do another pass, are you?"
"Good guess. Can't replace these birds."
Marcus pressed his earpiece and waited for Control to respond.
"Anya, this is Delta. I have some weird shit for Hoffman."
"I'll be happy to relay weird shit to him, Marcus."
Marcus's frown didn't shift at all. There'd been a time when it would have softened.
"Tolan is now a lake."
"As in seriously flooded?"
"As in lake. As in body of water and nothing else. As in the city is no longer there."
Anya paused for just a breath, no more.
"Yes, that definitely goes on the weird shit form."
At least she seemed more cheerful having Marcus around again. But that wasn't catching. Barber, Baird, and Marcus were all craning their necks for a look at the lake receding in the distance, expressions grimly blank.
There could be a perfectly natural explanation for this, Dom said. The planet still does stuff, right? Seismic activity, weather patterns, melting glaciers, all that crap.
Yeah, said Baird. It does, but they're back. The grubs are back, believe me, they're back. But I have no friggin' idea how they managed to do that.
It was a big intuitive leap, as Marcus called it. Maybe no more than wild imagination from a clever guy who could just as easily have been wrong. But Baird had a scary track record of being right. It's a long-winded way to try to drive out humans, Barber said. Unless the light mass really screwed them, and their weapons production has been so badly hit that they're reduced to damming rivers.
That's not a flooded city.
Baird began scribbling notes on a dog-eared pad, as if he was working out some relief diagram of the terrain.
That's a city that's sunk. Look at the elevation of the land around it.
You're crazy, said Barber.
Grubs aren't like us. They don't think like us. We don't even know what they want, do we?
Baird had a mind like a razor, especially where grubs were concerned. They were just one more type of machine for him to dismantle and understand.
There's always more motive for a war than just wanting to kill the other guy. We just need to work out what that is.
Then you can, but the scientists can't, Barber said.
Dumb assholes, Baird muttered. They haven't worked out an answer in 14 years, have they? Excuse me if I trust my own brain over theirs.
The cabin fell silent, except for the steady, ear-numbing drone of rotors and engine. A raven sounded very different from inside. Dom watched the glint on the new lake recede into a point of light and then vanish, and then they were passing over trees and derelict buildings again.
"Can grubs swim?" he asked. "Can they drown?" said Marcus.
Dom could only pray that they did. Marcus folded his arms across his chest, shut his eyes, and looked as if he was dozing. Dom knew damn well he wasn't, and that he was just brooding over something he'd never discuss. Dom's thoughts went back to Maria, and he told himself she couldn't have been in that drowned city, because she was alive, and he would find her. Alive. He knew it. This concludes Gears of War, Asfo Fields.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.